Hi, and welcome to The Bliss of the Abyss, where I, Dr. Nils Henestier, am taking over audio production proceedings for this episode, which starts with apple puns and descends inexorably into the gutter from there. Everyone's favourite right-wing psychologist come hack-for-hire, Jordan Peterson, makes an appearance, depending on what we mean exactly by the words Jordan, Peterson, and appearance. And you'll find out why New Year's traditions are just some neo-Darwinian trick to thin the herd. You'll hear proof that words can be literal violence. Rob and I will give our half-baked, creeping up to middle age, curmudgeonly views on why politics is a cesspool peopled by shit-loving clowns. And you'll get to hear the name of the corporation that owns all the other corporations. And you'll be able to hear Rob working out in real time that this corporation probably won't survive the revolution. And finally, you'll hear a whole lot about Sweden. So without further ado, The Bliss of the Abyss.
Hello, hello.
Hello. I swear to God, you never used to be an apple guy.
I'm an apple guy now. I love Apple. iPad, iPod. That's right. I'm still using my iPod.
What do you think about apple puns? Pro or negative?
Hit me with some.
For example, I pooed, and then an emoji of poo. elicited a chuckle.
It's a meta chuckle. More. I am laughing at how terrible it is.
Oh.
So,
I don't know how I feel now.
Yeah.
So it's a derision.
Yeah, someone delivers a joke so bad, you laugh, but you ain't laughing with them.
Hey, I'll take it.
Hey, could you just pair your headphones with my...
Oh, that cut me to the core.
Wrong fruit. Pair. They never quite took off as a telecommunications company, did they? Pair.
See, it made sense to me because I thought you were talking about a paring knife.
Oh, right, nice, yeah.
And then you missed my core joke, and then, the whole thing was already going downhill.
Yeah, fair enough. The joke had layers. Like an apple?
No, that's an onion.
Well, we're off to a bad start.
What is your life? It's 11:15 in Sweden. You're playing football and riding a bike. What kind of life is that?
I'm not only riding a bike, I'm riding a bike through the snow.
Dangerous, your situation.
I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say the moments with traction are rarer than the moments without. imagine someone who accelerates too quickly on a wet day from like a total stop and then never releases the pedal. And just does that all the way home. That's me right now.
So is the whole of Sweden just sort of aquaplaning the whole time and just hoping it's just like some version of Frogger?
Yeah, yeah. They actually ice their indoor spaces as well because the transition otherwise is just messes with their head too much. Yeah, the workplace is a fucking nightmare.
Aquaplaning through your lectures.
Yeah,
and that's the thing about this setting. You have to consider the
just slowly inching and accelerating towards one of the students. sorry.
There's that thing that when you're spinning round, you can put your arms out or tuck them in, right, and you go faster or slower. So you can do that for the important bits.
I punch out wildly so that they will move out of my way.
Good.
I'm going to do this motion with my arms, and if you're in my way, that's your fault.
Yeah, exactly. I just happen to be punching and walking forward.
That's
Yeah, well, no, sorry, aquaplaning. I got really sick on Christmas in a very, very surprising and almost immediate way.
Tell me about this.
Which was like 48 hours and then over. And since then, I've been totally fine, had a good New Year's and everything. But on Christmas Day, woke up, with the, you know, the family, had the nieces, had the aunt over, and everything was going great. Did stockings, had breakfast, had eggs, you know, the usual. Did presents. Presents were, you know what presents are like with kids. It's a giddy, sickening ride.
So, you know what presents are? I was like, yeah, I'm familiar with the concept of a present, yeah.
So, so you know what kids are, and you know what Christmas is, and you know what a day is, and you know what pajamas are.
No.
You know what eggs are. Have you seen that viral Jordan Peterson clip where he's like, well, first you have to ask what the word is means and then what the word what means. It's like the most stupid, like sophomoric version of like philosophy of meaning.
You know, most people hate Jordan Peterson because he's some curmudgeonly
right-wing
fucking shitbag. I hate him mostly because he likes to impersonate a professional philosopher.
Exactly. He's a psychologist. Yeah, that's right. So it's a lot of pop philosophy. It is. It's very, very annoying. But it's a very funny video to watch because it's so sophomoric and stupid.
Right.
But people consider him a guru, which is quite weird.
I will say, so we can put the Jordan Peterson thing to bed.
It's only just woken up. Back to bed, Jordan.
I'm not sliding anymore. I'm on firm ground. Let's talk Peterson. Oh, I am sliding. I'm still sliding.
Of course. I mean, yeah, joking aside.
The thing about Peterson, right, is there's a core bit to his message, which is lots of men are really suffering given the particular constellation of contemporary Western society.
Yeah.
And we should do something about it. And I think he's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And then there's just all the other crap.
And then there's all the other stuff
that
doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, I
which
know.
Gets further and further and more mental the more he goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know who Wim Hof is?
Yes, yeah, the Iceman, yeah.
There's kind of two ways you can go if you get that kind of moment in the sun that they both got, right? You either go the Wim Hof route where it's like, listen, I'm the Iceman. You give me more attention, I'll do more Iceman stuff.
Yeah.
He just keeps being more and more the Iceman. It's like, and we've got a TV show.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm the Iceman in this as well. I do stuff with ice.
Are you going to be bathing in ice or ice-like fluids?
Yes.
I'm not.
That's his thing. Or you go the J-Pats route, that's what I like to call him, and decide that you're like a thought leader guru. And
on any topic whatsoever,
Every single thing that there is out there, and you just have the right to chat bollocks into the void. And the further that goes on, the more it unspools and becomes less and less appealing.
Do you think that there is any topic that he wouldn't try to colonize?
Definitely not.
Like something really sort of technical and practical, like how to fix a turbine engine or something.
This is why I don't think he'd leave it, because he'd fucking make it like some Jungian archetype. He'd be like, it's like combating the dragon. And he'd turn it into the hero's journey or some other figurative analogy where he doesn't actually have to deal with, but do you need an RX-64 or an RX-65 for this bolt? Yeah. Well, it depends what you mean by R or X or 60. I've got to find you the meme. It's really funny.
You know, so people say to me, what do you believe in God? And I think, okay, there's a couple of mysteries in that question. What do you mean do? What do you mean you? What do you mean believe? And what do you mean God? And you say as the questioner.
Notice he didn't say what do you mean by in, though. In is beyond. That's incontrovertible.
Yeah. In is the axiomatic bedrock on which his whole theoretical edifice is built. Is the in theory of the universe. It's an incredible metaphysics.
What do you mean by what? What do you mean by do? What do you mean by believe? Obviously, we all know in. That's
Peterson derailed our conversation much as he derails
everything
he gets involved in.
Yeah.
So you're having a cracking Christmas morning.
Yeah, and we did the presents, and that was all good. obviously the next part of the day is the big Christmas lunch, dinner, whatever the name for that meal is. And duck was the main protein this year, unless you're a vegetarian or vegan, of which there are some in the house, in which case a soy-based Wellington.
Very nice. Not the dish, well, though. The footwear.
You know, big spread. Everyone sat down. I actually was at one of the heads of the table because I'm the most important member of the family.
Of course.
Obviously. You know, we all say grace and thank the Lord for the bountiful feast before us.
Do you actually?
Or some such. some version of it. I think someone said a Christian prayer, someone said a Jewish prayer, I believe, even though no one even knows anything. But, you know.
Was Jordan Peterson there?
Jordan Peterson was there. We all believe in him.
Did he start crying?
One would hope. So, just about to dig in, right? I take my first little forkful, put it in my mouth, and immediately my cheeks puffed up. I retched, a tiny bit of sick flew out of the side of my mouth, and my mouth filled up with vomit. And I abruptly stood up with a look of panic in my eyes, bolted for the door, bolted upstairs, absolutely vomited my guts
out. Oh my God.
And spent the whole of the rest of Christmas Day in bed, basically, until the evening.
Wait, what had you just eaten?
Nothing. Breakfast. Eggs.
What? So like, you like, just sat down and suddenly felt sick?
Yeah. It couldn't have been the Christmas dinner because I didn't get to eat it.
Right.
It was so bizarre. And then, so sort of Christmas Day and Boxing Day, I just felt like absolute shit. I was basically like either in bed or like attempting to socialize and be like, hi. You know, when it's that interesting thing where when you're with a group and, you know, you're six, you're in bed, and but you feel that like pressure that people are like, come on, you know. And then after a while, like, of you hanging out with them, they're like, actually, you know what, fuck off, you are sick. You're bringing everyone else down.
You're sort of bringing the energy down, Rob.
Yeah. And then by the time, basically, everyone was kind of going, I was like, right, Christmas, shall we do it? Felt right as rain. Yeah, so
horrible
yeah. Indeed. How was your Christmas?
My Christmas was similar, believe it or not. Christmas itself was all right. I sat down to dinner and suddenly felt sick come out the side of my mouth.
Oh my God, it's going round.
Yeah, no, but a couple of days after Christmas I became very ill. And I took a test. It said it wasn't COVID.
Classic.
But it had the classic feel of COVID. Because
right.
2 days later, I was like, I feel pretty good again. And then I felt bad again. I was like, normal colds don't do that, in my experience. Mm. They're more linear, aren't they?
Yeah, mine was like that as well. It's like a parabola.
Right.
It's just kind of like, whoop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very weird. So, and then I know exactly what you're talking about with respect to sort of entertaining people when you're unwell, because we had friends visiting from Hamburg while I had this thing. So I just had to dose myself up with ibuprofen and go sledding and stuff, which was still a lot of fun. But yeah, we had a quiet one, really. It was nice.
Yeah, you still managed to have fun, but you sort of, it's one of those things where, like, in the down times between fun, where usually you'd sort of, like, be chatting and just living your life, you just have those moments where you're like, God, I feel like shit.
Yeah.
That, like, you're like, that's your default that you revert back to, yeah, as opposed to just like, I'm just me.
Yeah. When you're no longer distracted.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a wallow in how terrible you felt. What did you do for New Year's?
New Year's was surprisingly good, but I sat down to dinner.
I think I know where this is going.
Now, we actually had sort of three separate plans presented themselves to us, each looking quite fun in different ways. One was a house party, one was a club pub kind of party, and one was like an outdoor covered event kind of party with lots of things,
right,
with different groups, and they all sounded pretty good. And then around 5 o'clock, Caitlin went, I'm going to make a ragu. Now, this was a rogue move. We were going to go out for dinner.
Right.
But we had been shopping just the other day and had bought the things for a ragu, thinking, hey, in the future, maybe we'll make a ragu.
Yeah.
Turned out that future was now.
Right.
I wasn't going to complain. So Caitlin makes a ragu. We eat the ragu. It's a lot of ragu. I went to bed. It was so much ragu.
Wait. It was like soporific ragu that stole New Year's Eve, or what?
No, not quite. Almost. I woke up about 11:30 to loud music from downstairs and Caitlin being like, are we going to do New Year's? Like, that's a good plan.
Has your ragu coma come to an end yet?
I'm just coming to you now. Just ended up just staying in for it instead and just kind of like, we had champagne, we danced, we played games, we sang songs, we called people, just in. But it's actually really, really fun. And kind of took the pressure off trying to go out and find fun and just had a load of fun at home. And then everyone else, I'd be curious to hear your story, because I've heard quite a few other people's New Year's story, and everyone else went out in search of fun and to varying degrees really didn't find it.
So really?
I'm hoping you had a good one, because so far I'm winning New Year's, but it's a bit lame to say I'm winning New Year's when it was just me and my wife dancing around the living room. I don't know. Maybe that is not lame anymore. Maybe that's the new rock and roll.
I think we had an even lower key. Ours was your New Year's, but a few years deeper into the marriage. We can't summon the energy to dance anymore. We didn't think we'd make it to midnight.
Oh, wow. Now that is new levels. Okay, yeah. That's good.
But then we did, of course. And then it was like, I wonder what Swedes do on New Year's. We had no idea. So then we just put it on the main TV station. Because when you put the BBC on or whatever on New Year's Eve, it doesn't really tell you what Brits care about on New Year's Eve. But it gives you a certain sense of what the country thinks it cares about.
Yeah, right?
Exactly. Like Big Ben or whatever.
Big Ben, the fireworks. Exactly. People might sing Auld Lang Syne.
Exactly. So we put it on and we were treated to some Swedish Schlager music. Are you familiar with this concept?
I'm about to be when you explain it and we listen to some Schlager music.
Schlager music is this like awful folk.
Oh, is it hurdy-gurdy kind of stuff?
It's not hurdy-gurdy.
Is it Euro Dance Party?
Yeah, it's sort of in that space.
Oh, that sounds bad.
You know, where you have a bunch of white people clapping on 1 and 3 rather than 2 and 4 as rhythm demands, you know, it's that. Or they're just clapping on 1, 2, 3, and 4. Sort of like an ominous march sound.
Schlager.
Schlager.
What does Schlager mean?
So Schlagen is the verb to beat.
Okay, so it's drum and bass?
It's like if not cool people invented house music, I suppose.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So it's very simple, very sentimental.
Hold on, I found Schlager top 100 hits. Is it like this?
This is like really contemporary Schlager music, yeah. Yes.
Okay, yeah, I think I get the vibe. But that, but more traditionally.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. So we turned on Swedish TV, and it was this dude called Lasse Holm, who is like known to Swedish people. I have no fucking clue who this guy is. And he's like singing us into the year with his really terrible pop hits. One of which was called, if I recall rightly, Macaroni Cannelloni. And I've got to say, if I was a record exec and someone walked through the door, I was like, I got a hit for you. Okay, what is it, Lasse? Macaroni, okay. Cannelloni, okay. Get the fuck out of my office. I don't care if it's fucking Mozart crossed with Bach. I'm not producing it.
See, that's why you're not a record exec.
Yeah.
Do you know the What's the word for it where it's probably not true, but you wish it is?
Apocryphal?
Apocryphal, thank you. The apocryphal pitch for Twins, apparently, was...
with Danny DeVito and Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, that was the pitch. Yeah. It was Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger, they're twins. It's like, sold! That's it. That's all you need. So macaroni cannelloni.
And the film is called Macaroni. Go on. Cannelloni. Why not twins? This seemed lamer. Sold.
I found the translation of the lyrics.
Okay.
Campagnola, flugirola, quattro stagioni, marinara, capricciosa. I can't resist. I get fascinated, feel hunger, feel thirst. It makes me passioned. It fills me with lust. This isn't the best translation ever, I think. Pescatore, Vesuvio. It's all things about how good Italy is, basically.
Yeah.
Mamma mia, pizzeria, cannelloni, macaroni, and lasagna.
It's like some not terribly cultured Swedish person's idea of what Italy is about.
Yeah.
In a bunch of random words.
And there he is. He looks like a bit of a dreamboat.
Oh, is it? Does he?
Well, he's kind of got that kind
of... This is it. I recognise it immediately.
Well, it's a classic. Oh, mate. Is this the Schlager stuff?
It's sort of in that same musical space. I don't know if it's technically Schlager, but yeah.
They're rolling bread. That seems appropriate.
Ciabatta.
Here he is. Oh, my God, it's so Swedish already. Dude, you have to watch this video because he's looking at the camera like, I'm the shit.
The song is shit, mate. Yeah. Anyway, so he sang us into the new year.
With cannelloni macaroni.
Yeah, and then we got to watch the, you know, hand model anchors of Swedish TV make crappy jokes. Mm. And then there were some fireworks. And it turns out the Swedes, they're pretty into their fireworks here. They're not quite on the level of the Germans. So if you've ever been in a big German city on what they call Silvester, New Year's Eve, I mean, it's like you're in a war zone. It goes absolutely bonkers. And it goes bonkers for about an hour.
Oh, really?
Like, where these people get that amount of fireworks.
Yeah, that's quite the production.
Yeah, it's insane.
God, Brits don't have the budget for that. You get about 10 minutes here.
Yeah. Like, it's a totally different cultural expectation about the fireworks. Anyway, but the Swedes was like a slightly lower key version of that. They did 10 minutes solid fireworking.
Mm. So I've spent quite a few New Year's in New York. It's always, I mean, the party is always fun, but they don't really sing Auld Lang Syne, which always is a little bit disappointing. And they have the ball drop, of course.
The ball drop thing.
Which is just
what
weird.
Is that?
I don't know.
Odd, isn't it?
You ask New Yorkers about it and they're like, it's a ball, it drops. You know, you don't get an explanation. but I was talking to my friend who's Spanish. Do you know the Spanish New Year's tradition?
The 12 grapes.
The 12 grapes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So 12 seconds before New Year's, you count down at 12, 11, and you eat a grape every second.
Yeah,
how many people die each year? Are there stats on this? It takes me more than a second to eat a grape.
You just got to swallow it down, hope it goes down the right pipe.
He eats like a duck. You just
it's a Simpsons reference.
Yes, it is.
He's like a fish. He's not like a duck. Lenny.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, okay, here we go. Boy of... sorry to piss on your chips. Boy of three dies, chokes to death, okay. Eating grapes.
Why
in
would
Spanish
the
New Year's Eve
it?
Tradition. That is a bit young to be eating grapes, isn't it? The three-year-old swallowed 12 grapes with each stroke of midnight on December, which ultimately...
I'm not sure it's too young to eat grapes, but I think it's too young to eat 12 grapes in 12 seconds.
Hurry up!
I don't really like it. Why am I not in bed? Eat the fucking grape.
Elderly people are also considered to be in grave danger. I skim read the passage and it said, affects more than 2 million Spaniards each year. And I thought, surely not. But it's not. It's dysphagia, a disorder that, you know, have difficulty chewing or swallowing. I thought for a second 2 million Spaniards were rushed to the hospital every year for these fucking grapes.
Yeah. Can we please stop It's tradition. It's
boo.
The hostel system.
Yeah. My small brother's small brother? Little brother. Something about small brother makes it very different.
Mean small brother. Are you sure you haven't been in Sweden, mate?
Mine's smaller brother. is going out with a Dane. And their tradition is they stand on a chair and jump to the floor.
Also seems like a lot of hospital cases.
It affects 2 million Danes every year.
Which is all the Danes, almost. Because you've got to think, they're not just getting on a chair, which is probably fairly dangerous at most times. They're probably also drunk.
Yeah, you would think so. Well, the Scots have got, whatchamacallit, they've got Hogmanay, don't they? They've got their own thing going on.
Yeah, what do they do?
They sing Auld Lang Syne.
Okay.
I think they kiss. I mean, that's to call that like a uniquely Scottish tradition seems a bit rich, probably.
Passionately. All members of the family. And then they love each other. Carnally. It's pretty obscene. A lot of hospital cases as well.
2 million.
2 million spots.
So, how is Sweden? How are you adapting? How long have you been there? For like 6 months now, is it? Nine, maybe?
Five. We got in August. Sweden is wonderful.
Yeah.
The only thing that tinges the experience of Sweden.
Here we go. The positives didn't last long. Yeah, it's great and everything, but here are the bad things.
Is in certain respects, it feels politically and socially like other places I'm more familiar with, like the UK and Germany, were probably like 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, in what way?
The societies in Germany and Britain, I feel like, have disintegrated in certain respects. Because there's like rhetoric around immigration and privatisation, taking important social institutions like post offices and banks out of high street, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Not enough public money, blah, blah, blah. And Sweden feels like it hasn't gone through that process yet, although there was privatisation of stuff here in the 90s. But it's sort of heading that way. And so...
That's a bit ominous.
I mean, yeah, I mean, so that's just an impression I have. And it's not really rooted in any very compelling evidence I can give you. It's just a feeling I have about the place. And it's sad because... I mean, it's sad, it's true, I suppose. Because at least in Uppsala, where I am, things, at least things that concern me, seem to run pretty well. You know.
Yeah, well, there's a stat that gets trotted out here fairly often. NHS satisfaction surveys were at their highest the last year that Labour were in power. And obviously they've decreased every single year and have been at their lowest year on year for a while. So to add perhaps a tinge of hope to your perhaps Marxist view of the way societies inevitably... go. Maybe it's just that we have crappy governments. I don't know. Then again, I guess Germany's economy for a long time was really very strong and now less so. And that whole manufacturing thing going to China and all that stuff is... because you're the Central European engineering powerhouse and then not really investing in tech. And then I guess... if that starts to fail and then there's cuts to public sector, then you get some of that Rust Belt stuff that happens in America or the steel stuff that happened in the UK. Similar kind of disaffected population and no social safety net.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is that right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I think one could point to sort of general trends that are more global that are part of, you know, quote unquote neoliberal package. The Bretton Woods consensus state smaller, increasing privatization of what were once public goods or state-run enterprises, that sort of stuff. Oh. But then there's also the more local phenomena, which is, you know, in the UK, obviously, you've had 13 years of Tory government. Yeah. And then in Germany, very similarly, the CDU came to power in 2008. And, you know, Angela Merkel, for all the optics of being this quite pragmatic, reasonable leader, was ultimately still a conservative of the Conservative Party, which means just funding public services is just not a priority for these people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I think the repercussions of that, you can see that now with the AfD, which is, I guess, like Germany's UKIP, becoming very popular. Yeah.
They're like the third most popular, aren't they?
Something yeah. Like that. You have a coalition government in Germany at the moment, which is looks fairly dysfunctional, but in many respects seems to be cracking on with tackling some real problems. But it seems to me that this real issue is it's just been saddled with all of this crap that's gone unaddressed for 12 years plus.
Yeah.
And now it's the consequences that will come home to roost. But, I mean, what's the mood in the UK like? I was chatting to a British colleague of mine from Durham recently about this, and I was saying how, like, when I go back home to Havant, it feels like the place is creaking a bit, you know, like there's just potholes everywhere. There's something dysfunctional about the feel of the place. And he said, because he's a little older than I, he said, it's how he felt about the UK around 97,
yeah.
When the last long stint of Tory government came to end. Like, stuff was starting to fall apart because it just hadn't been looked after carefully or as carefully for.
Yeah, it might be even a bit more insidious than that. It might be, like, actively neglected. You know, there's all kinds of cronyism and funneling of money to various places where it shouldn't go. Without getting too conspiratorial, I mean, it's just the facts of, like you say, public sector cuts. It's just like that money's not there, and yet we're paying like the highest tax burden for something like 50, 60 years proportionally. I think the general feeling, at least amongst sort of the majority of the electorate, and certainly amongst my friends, is that, like, there's no way the Tories can win this election. But it's got so bad that it just keeps, like, sinking to new depths. And instead of trying to do anything, they'll just, like, trot out some kind of culture war thing and just whip people up a bit. And meanwhile, the waiting lists grow longer, the strikes go on, things stop working.
The school roofs collapse.
All of that. For me, it's a bit ameliorated because I'm in London. There's just a certain element of, like, if there's a strike, there'll still be a bus because there's so many buses. There's a tube, right? If you're outside of that and you're like, you rely on the bus or the train and it's just, well, it won't run. It's like, okay, I'm fucked then, aren't I?
Yeah.
I think the mood is pretty down at heel right now for sure. Perhaps only made slightly softer by the fact that I just don't think they can win the election. Yeah, it's pretty depressing, honestly.
Obviously,
when you pay attention to it, the rest of the time you just try and get on with your life.
So, but to come back to Sweden, like, Sweden has a similar issue with the Sweden Democrats, which is sort of a UKIP-like party, has its origins in a vaguely neo-Nazi party. It isn't that anymore, but, you know, that's sort of its DNA, I guess.
Mm.
And it's something like 23% of the electorate voted for them.
Oof.
So Sweden isn't immune from the problem. But at the same time, it feels like a place that, at least for someone like me, seems to work very well. You know, the bureaucracy is very efficient, and, like, the roads are well taken care of. Trains don't run on time, which is a bit of a weird one.
Yeah,
you know, like, we've had absolutely tons of snow, even for Sweden, this winter. And it's a surprise if it isn't cleared within 3 hours.
Yeah.
From the bike path, to put it a little hyperbolically, but not incredible.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
because obviously, like, in terms of look up any indexes of, like, you know, most democratic, most egalitarian, it's always the Nordic areas are always top of that list. Yeah, and I was in Stockholm, was it last summer? Stockholm, and then outside of Stockholm for a bit as well, and had an amazing time. And it was kind of palpable that, it was like everything works. It wasn't that sort of feeling, like you say, of the fraying around the edges. Yeah. I didn't get that feeling, but I was just passing through. But you're living there and you've still got some of that. That feels good. I mean, I feel like people wish it wasn't fraying here. Yeah. It's not like...
You know, like when you go into, like, a public toilet And I feel like in the UK now, I'm expecting it to be out of service.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Whereas here, I'm like, no, it's going to be working. I'm going to go in. It will have been cleaned.
You know, like there's that term microaggressions. It's almost like that, like micro disappointments.
Yeah,
that, like, you build into the fabric of every interaction.
Yeah,
that just sort of you brush them off, but like surely there must be some accumulation. Like I learned recently, do you know how caffeine works?
I mean, not in detail, no.
So there's a sleep hormone called adenosine, right? Yeah. And basically it's what sends you to sleep, right? And it builds up through the day. And eventually there's enough of it that your body is like, oh my God, I have to sleep. And you go to sleep.
Right.
What caffeine does is it blocks the transmitters that release this hormone. Right? So it doesn't actually give you energy. It just temporarily blocks the tiredness of adenosine on your body. So you're like, oh. And then when that wears off, then you feel a bit, because the floodgates open and more comes through, right? Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, tiredness.
Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you, I remember you. Yeah, I feel like it's a bit like that with all of life in the UK. I also learned there's this hormone that makes you hungry, and it's got the best name. It's called ghrelin. Isn't that good? It sounds like it would be the thing that makes you hungry. I'm ghrelin, feed me.
Yeah, it's the sound your gut makes when you're hungry.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I heard you ghrelin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's marvellous. And the other thing that's lovely about Sweden is, I'm only really familiar with Uppsala, so take this all with a pinch of salt. People are so chilled out.
Yeah, that was my experience.
Moving from Hamburg in particular, people in Hamburg in general, very nice, but it is a big city and it is full of Germans. And Germans, they're a bit high-strung, you know.
Yeah.
So, like in Hamburg, it was almost a daily occurrence, it felt like, that someone would lecture me about how I was cycling on the wrong side of the road, or raising my children wrong, or just sort of shaking. No, I mean, seriously, like actual, one of my kids would get too thrown a strop and shout. And then there was one time this older woman came up to me and just stood there staring and said, "Is it always like this?"
Oh my God.
Meaning, Christ. I'm going to seem like I care about your well-being because it must be really hard on you. But what I'm actually doing is passive-aggressively saying, you're a bad parent. Yeah,
exactly. And I have the answers for exactly how to raise your child. Even though I don't know you, never met you, will never see you again. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about the woman who just stared me out on the U-Bahn in Hamburg?
No, you did not. That sounds interesting. What is it?
All right. So my kids were, it was a relatively empty train. I can't remember where we were going. And I was set on one side. They were set on the other side. You know, you had the little sort of seating bays with the benches facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a woman, one bay in front of me, but facing obviously in my direction, I'm facing her direction. And my kids actually, uncharacteristically, pretty well behaved. They're being quiet. They're not hopping around, despite the fact that the carriage is empty and, you know, whatever, they have every right to just hop around.
Yeah.
And she's just staring me out. And it's clear that she's not just looking at me, because that's a thing that happens in Hamburg, at least, and possibly Germany in general, where people, they just, like, look at you a lot.
What, in that sort of, like, way that it happens in Asia, where they're just curious and will just look at you and not feel sort of any kind of self-awareness about it and just be like, yeah, it's fine. I just look at people and they look back.
Yeah. Like not hostile.
Not hostile, just like.
But when you're used to a certain cultural norms, maybe from the US or whatever.
US like, or UK, where it would be like, what are you doing up, mate, after a while? Yeah.
What the hell are you doing? You know,
yeah.
But this woman wasn't doing that. She was like scowling at me.
Yeah, right. So then the stuff starts to go through your head of like, is she Brexit policies, please? You know, is she dangerous? Is she? Yeah. It's like you cycle through, like, what is this woman's deal?
Well, I didn't cycle through long. I just sort of addressed it head on. I just said,
slapped her with an open palm.
I laid out a layer of ice. I slid in her direction. I went, I'm going to do this punching motion. If you're in my way, that's not my fault. And that's how the judge saw it too. There's too many callbacks here. I'm losing track.
Okay. It depends on what you mean by callback. Quick, throw an apple pun in.
It's a callback.
A callback. Yeah, very good.
There we go. We got it. So yeah, I said, can I keep your hair? You know, can I help you?
Right.
And she went, ich denke, Sie müssen Ihre Kinder besser erziehen, which means, I think you should raise your children better.
What? What the
which
fuck?
Which is mad. I wasn't even that surprised because I'd been so brutalized by the city and these like comments from, as you say in German, wie fremde Leute, like wildly strange people. That is to say, not that they're odd, but you've never met these people before. And then, but you'll love this, Rob.
Yeah.
I'd been trained by the city. So I'd had lots of moments to think, that's what I should have said. Mm-hmm. And I fired right back at her. I said, what? More Nazi-like, like you would.
Oh, shit. Boom, one in the chamber.
Yeah. And she didn't really recover from that. You know, I mean, people say, oh, snowflake generation, oh, they say words are violent, but it's not violent. Yeah. These words were violent. You see her torso ripple with the force of the assault. Yeah. Felt good. It turned out there was something not quite right with her, because then she started asking if I was a doctor. I said, well.
And then she clutched her heart and fell to the ground. And you thought, was this the right move?
Someone...
I am technically a doctor.
I said, I am a doctor, not the kind of doctor you're thinking of. And then she asked me about allergies, and I was like, I'm not that sort of doctor. And then at the end, and this felt like a vindication for fighting fire with fire, she apologized. She just said, I'm sorry, I'm not feeling very well. It was a really, really bizarre interaction, but she seemed to.
Was she kind of contrite, perhaps, that she'd overstepped?
Yeah, I think she realised, and I like to think if I'd been more meek, she wouldn't have had that realisation.
Because I think a lot of the time, actually, we feel like, just let it go.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of us do feel that. And then, so those people, it's not that they're emboldened. It's just that if they're never called out on it, they're like, well, I do this because I, what's that? I calls it as I sees it and I says as I does. And that was, you know, all that kind of
attitude. You pays your money, you makes your choice. I don't feel that's relevant. You pays your money. Oh, yeah, you makes your choice. Yeah, we got it.
Yeah. And my mum is a bit, growing up, she would do things sort of like how you just, did in that story and I'd be embarrassed but looking back I'm like actually no she's a bit of a hero for doing that and then I'm slowly sort of becoming a bit more that person a bit more like you. Were your kids embarrassed or were they like hero daddy? What was the
I think they're just sort of intrigued by the social interaction, you know,
right?
Because they're young enough that they can be embarrassed by stuff and they do have a sense of what's normal, but they're also figuring out what the norms are,
right?
It's funny you mentioned that about your mum, because that is precisely my motivation for doing that. Is I don't want to show them that you'd be a dick to these people.
No.
Most of the time, actually, the gentle approach is the more productive one. But that you don't have to take that sort of treatment.
Right.
But you deserve respect from this person. If they're not giving it to you, you have a certain right to push back.
Clap back, yeah. I mean, yeah.
By throwing the worst fucking insult you could possibly
trust in their direction. That's the end bomb in Germany. That's the N word.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, the reason I mentioned that anecdote was because in Sweden, it's like they have got the best of both worlds of the UK and Germany. So the thing about the Germans, at least putting aside the general worries about the fabric of society saying blah, 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 is they're very thorough.
Yes.
So they put their minds to something and they get the job done. Mm. The job gets done right, etc.
Yes.
You can sort of rely, you know, at least 20 years ago, the trains would all be on time.
Yeah.
All the rest of it. But the price of that seems to be that you have a bunch of people who've become socialized to just be norm police.
Busybodies.
Yeah, exactly. Every time you stray outside the lines, they take this delicious enjoyment in correcting you, basically. And so you just have a face with this regularly, especially if you're a slightly free spirit, like I dare say I am. But in the UK, my experience in general, obviously this is just all generalization, people just leave you alone. Mm. The liberal tradition is a bit different there. And mostly people just let you get on with it. They're almost to the point of indifference.
Almost to the point of indifference. Yeah, I was about to say, and that's where on the other end of the extreme that goes wrong is like not stepping in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the other cost of that as well is the norms aren't obeyed sufficiently well. So like when you had the masking requirements for COVID, all the Germans were wearing a fucking mask.
Right.
And in the UK, I was like, I'll just put it on my chin.
Is that? Yeah, exactly.
So you come to Sweden, and it's like somehow the norms get followed. So they've internalized that the norm's important, but they're not busybodies about it. So if you go like, no, I'm going to walk across a meadow, despite the fact there's a sign that says don't walk on the grass, everyone will sort of look at you. Maybe they'll have nasty thoughts about you, but they don't feel inclined to point out that you violated some norm. And it's like, it's just great.
Oh.
Somehow they've cracked it.
Right. For the next 20 or 30 years until it all...
Until it all falls to shit. And we are facing the second climate war, joining the armed forces of Eurasia.
What is the stage after late stage capitalism? Do you know intimately Marxism? We don't have the Marxist utopia after late stage capitalism, do we? Is that the next bit, or is there?
Yeah.
Is it really next? Is there not some?
Well, it's going to depend on your Marxist theorist, but on the traditional conceptions, socialism and then communism. Yeah, where the means of production are taken over by the working class.
Sweet.
it's a coming. You know, the Soviet Union, though, Rob, it wasn't that. You know, I hate to break this to you, but.
They didn't do it properly.
It was sort of suffocating.
But you're saying that the means of production will be taken over. So the next CEO of Ford will be... No, there won't be any CEO.
I love that. There's something so parochial about that. So the next CEO of Megacorp will be just so working class dudes. I don't think there'll be a Megacorp, Rob. No, but there's got to be a Megacorp.
No, but there'll be a split into smaller megacorps, but it'll ultimately be some kind of hierarchy, perhaps.
You're gonna have a hierarchy. Where am I going to buy my widgets if there's no megacorp? I don't understand.
Have you been following the post office scandal? Speaking of the post office and services.
Following would be a stretch, but I have been made familiar with it. So it's quite long standing, right? But it's just erupted, it feels like, in the last few days.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you about it. Yeah, less about the details of the scandal, which are themselves very interesting, but more actually because of what you study and lecture. Because, it is long standing. And there have been public inquiries, there have been compensations, there have been all kinds of things about it. But what it's taken in order for actually people to sit up, pay attention, and now government are like now rushing through legislation is a popular
ITV drama.
Yeah. In effect, a piece of art, I mean, it's not fiction, but it's inspired by real events, but obviously it's taking, artistic liberties.
Yeah.
But the actual scandal itself, the journalism, all of the parliamentary inquiries, all of that stuff didn't make an inch compared to the sort of mile of impact that's been made by this drama. I sort of find that fascinating. I was wondering if you had, I don't know, some insight as to why you think that might be.
I mean, I have a couple of thoughts. I mean, with respect to the artwork having that influence, the way that art, especially if it's enjoyed in common, as it is when it's on a mainstream national broadcaster, that obviously just means that a set of ideas are planted in lots of people's heads at the same time, and that can propel political action and potentially change. Why it took that rather than the other stuff to propel ministers, etc., to jump into action? I think the answer to that is just a pretty cynical one, which is that you have a political class that doesn't really give a fuck about running the country well on the whole.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they would turn up to work every morning and go, well, what are the problems that need to be solved? And that would be one of the things on their to-do list. We've had this inquiry. Evidently, these people have been totally unjustly treated.
Yeah.
And we need to make amends, regardless of if anyone finds out about what a great job we did about it, right? It doesn't matter that we don't have a bunch of people who've just watched an ITV show writing letters to us.
Exactly. And now it has this slight ick factor of now they get to make the stump speech and be like, and we're now righting these wrongs. And it's like, yeah, but you should have already been right. Like you handed out a CBE to the head of the post office after this scandal had already happened. You didn't give a fuck. So then that only just further erodes the trust.
Yeah. No, I think it's really awful.
Which is threadbare.
Because I can understand why you or I, or just some, as philosophers in the 60s would say, the plain man on the Clapham omnibus might just learn about it from an ITV show. But if you are in Westminster and your brief is to supervise certain privatised public services or whatever, you will know about this. Or if you don't, then you're grossly incompetent. So
And to a certain extent, like, again, with the cynicism, I can kind of understand. Like, it's Fujitsu who did the software, or it's Post Office Limited. They're corporations, right? And they're set up to protect their bottom line. So, the morality, unfortunately, obviously gets thrown by the wayside and people are prosecuted and they'd like make an example. All of that kind of stuff, I can kind of see, as horrible as it is. But a democratic institution, a representative, a member of parliament, whatever you want, all of that stuff, it just should embody something slightly, even a gnat's wing, more noble, more important, more conscientable. But it just doesn't. I mean, then again, look, it does. I mean, like, it just takes an age and an avalanche. And then the people who actually, like, really care and do the real work don't often get to be the person holding the microphone saying, we're going to make a difference. It's like someone like Rishi fucking Sunak being like, I'm going to right some wrongs. It's like,
one shouldn't go into politics in order to stand in front of the camera with a microphone and say, pat oneself on the back, right? I mean, the point is, you're supposed to be doing your level best by whatever ideological or from whatever ideological perspective you happen to inhabit. Make the country run better, by extension, the broader world. Mm. And like, it just seems like such an own goal. If you conceive of politics as that, that's like a normative description of politics, right? I'm not describing politics as conducted. That seems roughly what it ought to be doing. And when you have a total own goal like this, you're just like, what the fuck are these people doing?
What are they actually doing?
The thing about the Tories in particular, although I suspect they're not alone in this, is they have struck me, especially in more recent years, as an incredibly reactive party. Yeah. So there was a period where it felt like there was just weekly U-turns, like under the Johnson government, for instance.
Yeah, particularly.
It was clear what was happening there. It was like they made some decision and then enough people went, rah, 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 we don't like it. And then they shit the bed and go, oh, I guess we can't do that. And if you were looking at that with rose-tinted glasses, you'd say, well, that's democracy at work. You know, they made a decision, they got the negative feedback, they change the decision. But I think they're just, most of the decisions they're making are fairly cynical. And then the ones they can't get away with, they track them back.
Yeah, it does seem like that. But, you know, I mean, there's the famous politics is the art of the possible quote, right? Which is, I think that's true. But that doesn't mean that it's just the art of sticking your finger in the wind and seeing which way it goes. And, you know, if you misread the wind, go, actually, no, I meant the wind was blowing that way. But you said the complete opposite last week. Ah, but I misread the wind. Yeah, but it's not about the wind. Are you sure? Yeah. Okay, no, you're right. It's not about the wind. I never thought it was about the wind.
It's become, in the UK at least, the art of the possible in the sense of, what is it possible for me to do without inducing some collective...
What can I squeak past?
Yeah.
There's also this terrible trend, I don't know if you're aware of it, of quite a few sitting members of parliament now have TV shows on these new weird right-wing networks that no one watches. So they're just patently part of the time doing another job for which they're paid, despite
Are
being...
Are you talking about like GB News?
GB News. What's the other one? Talk TV.
Is it true that no one watches it?
The watching figures are very low.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
It's comforting. Yeah.
It's all funded by like think tanks, if you want to call them that. One of them's Murdoch money. Yeah, it's all stuff where it's like they don't have to necessarily disclose where all the money's coming from because it's owned by a shell corporation that's owned by another shell corporation that's owned by another shell corporation. Let's see who owns GB News. Talk TV, which is the other main big one, is owned by Murdoch. I know that for sure.
Right.
All Perspectives Limited.
How is that name ironic? Let me count the ways.
Oh, that's good, isn't it?
Sorry, I think you mean Limited Perspectives All.
And then that's owned by Liberty Global PLC. I mean, it sounds like I'm making this up.
I'd love it if the umbrella company for All Perspectives Limited was Some Perspectives GmbH.
It's one of those things of you have like, I don't know, you have a packet of crisps or something, you look on the back and you're like, Pepsi? That's weird. And you like look into it, it's like, no, Pepsi's actually owned by, and you're like, what? And you go into it and it just keeps funneling up and it's actually all like Unilever or something. Yeah, and it just keeps getting bigger and weirder and more esoteric. And you're like, how many companies actually are there?
Two.
And they're owned by one megacorp.
Jeff Bezos. Yeah, megacorp, that's right. But, you know, the CEO will be a working class guy.
Exactly. So Jeff. Ironically.
he turns up with a fake mustache. Jeff Bezos from Hartlepool. That's me. Okay. It's a nice suit, Jeff. It is.
Do you remember that? Speaking of Simpsons, when he goes to the post office, Homer goes, hello, my name is Mr. Burns. I believe you have a letter for me. Okay, Mr. Burns, and how do you spell your first name? I don't know.
Thinking one move ahead. Oh god. The thing about Sweden is you don't fuck around with the clothes.
Really?
You get kitted out. Yeah. So I am toasty.
Really? Are we talking long johns, thermals, thick socks, the lot?
Not even that complicated. Right now, it's not that cold. It's only about -2.
It's just shorts. You're the Iceman.
Yeah, sorry. Call me Wim Hof.
They've been doing the cold thing for a long time. Now, how far north is Uppsala? Do you get the dark thing as well? Like, is it just, like, dark the whole time?
We're not in the Arctic Circle, so no. But the days are pretty short. We're about as far north as the very northernmost tip of Scotland.
Okay,
maybe like the Shetland Islands.
Right. That is quite a short day then. So long summers, yeah.
Yeah. It's bloody glorious in summer. I was here last June. I mean, you said you were in Stockholm last time, so maybe you're familiar with it. But
just beautiful.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning.
But it messes your head. I remember going back to the hotel with a colleague because I was here for a conference and it was creeping up to midnight, but it was still light out. So we're like, do you want to go grab a coffee? It just didn't seem right to go
to
bed.
Have breakfast?
And then we went to this, it's quite nice, like, gastropub thing that's built into the train station here in Uppsala.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely buzzing.
Really?
Turned out half the city had had the same idea, yeah.
But they've got the really restrictive laws on booze there, though, don't they?
Well, apparently not at this establishment.
It's my understanding that they had a referendum on whether to completely ban alcohol in Sweden.
Is that right?
And it was close to 50-50. Okay, 1922, Swedish prohibition referendum. 51%
voted to ban it.
No, supermajority.
We need a supermajority. Okay. 67%. Supermajority?
It was that close. Yeah, it was 51%. The Swedes love a referendum, I believe.
You're thinking of the Swiss.
The Swiss love a referendum. They love a fucking referendum.
I'm not sure they love but they just feel compelled to have it.
They can't help it.
The Swedes, I don't know if they're referenduming.
No, you're right. I was thinking of the Swiss. The Swedes have had 6 referenda. Do you like that?
I do.
Good.
He's been practicing his Latin endings.
But I mean, there's no way a referendum on alcohol in the UK would get anywhere close to 51-49.
No, in the 20s.
I mean, it only passed in the States because it was elected representatives. I don't think if it had been a popular vote, it would have passed at all.
Yeah. Well, they U-turned on that one pretty fast.
Yeah.
Wait, was it? Am I right in thinking it was a constitutional amendment
to end prohibition?
Yeah, to prohibit booze. Yeah.
To begin it and to end it. I thought it was just a law passed in the...
I feel like it was a constitutional amendment. Look it up, come on.
A resolution calling for a constitutional amendment. Passed by both houses in December 1917. You are right, it was. The 18th Amendment, repealed by the 21st Amendment, the only constitutional amendment to be repealed in American history.
There you go.
Yeah, they had to... I know they had to pass a law recently in the States because of... You know that January 6th thing, like Trump had that plan. He was like, what we'll do, I'm not going to do the voice, is we'll just get Mike Pence to just throw it out. He just, you know, the VP's meant to say, I certify it and bang on the hammer. And we'll just get him not to do that.
Yeah.
Obviously, stupid plan. But technically, there wasn't something in the law saying that he couldn't do it. So then they right. swiftly passed the law being like, no. He has to bang on the hammer. That's
it. What if he resigns as VP? No, the law says that Mike Pence has to bang a hammer.
But he's been dead for 40 years.
Dig up his corpse like we did last time and make him bang the hammer. He doesn't even have hands anymore.
Dude, can you look up Nicolas Cage tomb?
Oh no.
Oh no is right, my friend. Oh no is right.
Has he like pre-ordered his tomb?
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
Warm.
It's better than that.
Nicolas Cage tomb. It's the third hit.
I wanted to say mausoleum, but that would have given it away.
Oh my goodness. It's a pyramid.
He's had a pyramid built.
It's monomaniacal, isn't it?
Yeah. The weirder part is it's in New Orleans, right, where they don't traditionally bury the dead because of the floodplains.
Right.
So they do actually usually use mausoleums, but they're not usually these crazy Illuminati pyramids. Stand there, maybe the house. Listen, buddy, I should let you go. It's
20
to
1. 20 to 1,
Michael.
I've got to get up in about 5 hours.
Yeah, of course. When it's still dark, as do I.
But it's always dark, Rob. It's always dark.
Leave me with a nugget before you go. It's been so nice talking
nugget.
To you.
Nugget. Yeah. It has been nice.
Cannelloni macaroni, my friend.
Cannelloni macaroni. In our inner courtyard here, which is quite large, it's like a housing association. I walked in one day in December and saw that the big pine tree, the big tannenbaum in the middle, had been lit up for the Yuletid. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's nice. And then I reflected for a bit as I was appreciating it and thought, there wasn't a fucking tree there before. It turns out they chopped down, I'm talking like a 6 or 7 meter high tree.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
A proper big boy.
They chop down a giant tree and then they just stick it in the ground for our enjoyment. And I can only guess they do it every year. In fact, there are 2 courtyards and they've done it in both.
Well, they've got a lot of them.
It's true, they've got a lot of them. The other thing I'll say that's related to this is Sweden is dark in the winter in one sense, but with the snow and the amount of lights that are shining out of all the buildings, it's actually sort of bright for 24 hours. It's bright enough now that I could cycle around without lights relatively safely. Yeah. Because the snow reflects so much light. It's really beautiful. It's lovely.
Oh, man. Nils Hennes Steer. Look at that. Don't say I never do anything for you, lovely people of the podcast. I'm staying up late just to give you those nuggets. Those nuggets, not those nuggets. These nuggets. I love you. I must go to bed. Good night.